morning, everybody. Welcome to the first session on Saturday morning. I'm pleased to introduce Eric Donnelly and Jorge Beltran Luna from UC Berkeley and UC San Diego, who are going to be talking about designing and teaching a practical orthography of Negromante Zapotec.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming today. This is an overview of the talk. I'm going to be talking a little bit about Negromante Zapotec, and then we're going to be talking about other orthographies that are used for Cajono Zapotec varieties, and then some specific things that we did to organize the workshop and to design the orthography. And then we'll be talking about some specific obstacles that we faced when we were teaching this workshop. So Negromante Zapotec is spoken in El Negromante, Veracruz, or Los Ogat, as known by Negromante Zapotec speakers. It's an Eastern Otomanguean language spoken by about 2,500 people. It's endangered, and this particular dialect of Cajono Zapotec is undocumented. And about 70 to 80% of speakers are literate in Spanish, but very, very few members of the community are literate in their native language. And this is partly due to the fact that all writing and official business are conducted in Spanish. So this is where we are, southern Mexico on the border between Oaxaca and Veracruz. And you can see that, if you're familiar with southern Mexico, the A is Negromante, and this is in the state of Veracruz. But most of the people that live in Negromante are descendants of immigrants from the northern Sierra of Oaxaca. So if you can see it, this area, those are mountains. Okay, so this is the consonantal phonology of Negromante Zapotec. And we'll be talking a little bit about some of the problems that we faced in teaching some of these segments that are unfamiliar to speakers, although they do have them in their native phonology. So their conscious awareness of them is had to become clearer in order for us to teach the orthography. There's a four-vowel system with U as an allophone of O and W. And each vowel is a tone-bearing unit, as this is an Otomanguean language. All of the languages in this family have tone. There are three level tones and two contour tones. And there are two possible vowel modalities, a plain and a checked or laryngealized vowel. So literacy in Spanish poses some problems for us in teaching this workshop, and that's something that we're going to be coming back to throughout the talk. So we had to teach conscious awareness of the unique or special or foreign phonemes in Negromante Zapotec. And if we look back at the fricatives, affricates, and a lot of the sonorant consonants, you can see that there are some consonants that are not found in Spanish, and these were the ones that we had the biggest challenges in teaching to speakers. And then there was a little bit of problems teaching the vowel system, just because Spanish is a five-vowel system, and a lot of times speakers will misperceive U as being a phoneme in Negromante Zapotec, although it's just an allophone. Okay.
So I would like to talk about the development of the orthographies in the northern Sierra of Oaxaca. It began around 1985 with non-specialist indigenous teachers, and it was furthered by a commission named Coordinadora para la Lectoescritura del SA de la Sierra Norte. And this commission developed this alphabet or orthography, and they named it Asachi's alphabet because it was authenticated by the authorities of northern Sierra communities. And there are also other orthographies used within this dialects of Cajono Zapotecs, such as Yalalac and Yatsachi and Sogocho. And these are mainly, they were mainly developed by SIL linguists. So the development of the Negromante Zapotec orthography, we took the Asachis as a base, mainly because it was used by a lot of speakers of Northern Sierra Zapotec, and also because it was somehow considered as the people's alphabet, because it was developed by the teachers and authenticated by their authorities. We designed it to be practical and flexible, and another criteria was we wanted it to be easy for speakers to read other Zapotecs, so we wanted to share some characters with the Asachi. These are some of the phonemes we took from them, or different in Spanish, in Zapotec, I mean. We also have different vowel quality contrasts, and we also had to decide when to write tone. As Aaron mentioned before, this is a tonal language. These are some of the guiding principles we had. Use as few characters as possible. Utilize familiar symbols as possible. In this case, we took them from Spanish because that's what we use in Spanish to write with. And we encouraged revision of this alphabet with the speakers. Okay, so these are some of the Asachi characters we took, and we used them in our orthography. So the immediate goals of the workshop were to teach students how to read and write in Zapotec. Teach them some basic phonological properties of Zapotec, and we also wanted them to appreciate the differences between their two languages, Spanish and Zapotec. And another important thing was we wanted them to learn about their cultural and historical background. Okay. Other goals were to fight negative ideologies surrounding their language. We wanted to encourage younger speakers and semi-speakers to use Zapotec, especially on social media. Many of them are related to this, or they use social media now. We wanted to standardize an alphabet already familiar by them. As I mentioned, the Asachi alphabet has been used widely in the Sierra Norte of Oaxaca. And we wanted basically to show them that Zapotec is not an alien or a hard language, right? So it can be written, it has a grammar, and it's a valuable language. We also wanted, our ultimate goals, we wanted to increase the village-wide Zapotec literacy. We wanted to encourage the creation and distribution and public use of materials written in Zapotec, especially in the bilingual schools. There are some bilingual schools, but basically the teaching is in Spanish. So if we want to improve this, we need to get materials, right? So, and this is a way we wanted to contribute to that. We wanted to create awareness of the endangerment of the language and contribute to its revitalization. During the workshop, we had around 8 participants, and their ages ranged from 11 to 37 years. Originally, we invited only speakers because our goal was to teach them how to write. But the reality was a little different. We didn't get only speakers. There were also passive speakers. So we had to change some things. During the workshop. It wasn't a classroom in a bilingual school in Negromante. During the sessions, the students were encouraged to participate and interrupt whenever they had questions. So we wanted them to feel like they were contributing and in the development of this, in this orthography, so they could take it as their own also, not just imposing our language, the orthography. The dynamics I would assign, I was a facilitator, I'm from there, from the community, I'm a native speaker, and I would assign homework every day. We will go over this during the next session. And the students that were not speakers, that were required to elicitate examples from speakers. And, well, this was another way for them to get involved more in the language, with the language. The characters were grouped primarily by natural class, and that's how we introduced them, little by little. And we introduced the characters familiar to them first in Spanish. And then we focused on the ones that were different, okay? I would introduce the characters, I would elicit the examples, and then we would practice by different games during the class. So as I said, our goal was to use only Zapotec in the class, or during the class. But we ended up speaking Spanish most of the time, because first, not all of them spoke Zapotec. And then a lot of the concepts are in Spanish, so that was another thing. Let's see. And lastly, we based our orthography from the Asachis, and we told them that it was developed by indigenous teachers and validated by authorities. And we wanted them to be also part of this and participate in the development or adaptation of this orthography for our dialect. And we wanted them to feel, you know, as contributors to this orthography. I think that's
right. So some of the obstacles we faced in teaching this orthography were probably ones that any of you would face if you were trying to establish an orthography in a community. But others, such as teaching tone, teaching laryngealization, and dealing with dialectal differences, were specific to Nigromante Zapotec. So first I'm going to be talking about some general obstacles. One problem was that students first perceived all of the characters that were presented to them as if they were Spanish characters or Spanish phonemes. And this was just because they didn't have any other basis on which to interpret characters. So I remember the first time Jorge wrote DX on the board, which is supposed to represent the phoneme J. Speakers didn't know how to interpret it. And so there was a lot of, there was a big learning curve at first where we just had to work through what some of these new characters meant. And then we also did repurpose some Spanish characters, and this was something that the Atsachi alphabet did as well. So for example, a J, an orthographic J, is not equivalent to a velar fricative as it is in Spanish, but it's a uvular fricative in Zapotec. So speakers at first didn't necessarily recognize the J as being a velar fricative because they don't have a uvular fricative in Spanish. And I think people are generally aware that, they are aware that Spanish and Nigromante Zapotec are different in terms of many linguistic properties, including the phonology. But people talk a lot about tone being different and accent being different. And so what we wanted to do was to increase the awareness of the phonology using the orthographic symbols. So by the end of it, people knew that these are the sounds that exist in Nigromante Zapotec, and these are how many sounds exist in the language as well, based on the number of characters that we talked about. So teaching tone was another problem. And just like we as linguists sometimes have problem hearing tone, especially when we are first documenting a language, this was an obstacle for our students, even though most of them are native speakers of this language. So we presented them with minimal pairs, and most of these minimal pairs we embedded in phrases that they were already familiar with and that they probably use every day. So for example, where is he, she from?
God viene.
We compared that to nine people.
God viene.
And we also compare that to a Chilantec.
Venega.
which is an ethnicity. And so by presenting sets like these of minimal pairs for tone, it became clear pretty immediately to speakers that there was a difference and that they could recognize that difference. So at first we would just go through these minimal pairs and we would tell people the tone for where is high and the tone for nine is low. And then we would try to elicit words that also had these tones, or also elicit just minimal pairs for tone, even if they didn't have the same tones that we had already been talking about. And luckily, tone marking is supposed to be iconic of pitch. So for example, a contour tone is something that looks like a contour. So we tried to focus on that as well. And just like when you're documenting a language that has tone, it's really important for people to practice hearing, identifying, and writing tone. And we actually worked with speakers a lot to decide when to write tone. So the Adsachi orthography that was established doesn't write tone at all. And I think this is something that you would all sympathize with. I was bothered by this because there are cases in which it is very hard to figure out what a word is if there's no tone. And so the guidelines that we created with the students in the classroom were that if there's a minimal pair and the context isn't clear as to which word you're using, then this is a good case in which you should try to write tone. And we also encourage students to write the tone that they heard and not necessarily the underlying tone, which I think would create a lot of difficulties, both for writers and for readers. And we focused a lot on the minimal pair sets that we had already established so that students could go back to those to help them to write new tones that they had never written before. So laryngealization was another challenge in teaching to write. But this is contrastive as well, and so we presented students again with minimal pairs. So nine baskets.
Gaga.
Is an example of a minimal pair for laryngealization as well as for tone. And syllables that are otherwise the same with respect to laryngealization can be different for tone. So for example, the word for phlegm, as in
Zakajoga,
is different, is a minimal pair for tone as compared to basket. So we presented speakers with minimal pairs like these so that they were able to recognize that tone and laryngealization can both be present on a syllable and that all of these are important to write and to recognize when reading. This was a lot easier to teach than tone was though, because it's a binary contrast, so that was great. People caught on to this contrast a lot faster than they did tone. The same, we just compared minimal pairs, and then we elicited examples from speakers. So Nigromante's Zapotec is compared to other Cajonos varieties. There are some phonological differences, and this was something else that we focused on during the workshop. So Nigromante's Zapotec doesn't have an alveolopalatal fricative, both voiced and voiceless. This is one difference. It doesn't have tsa or dza. And some Cajonos varieties have a schwa in addition to the other vowels that are present in the Nigromante system. And there's also a shift from a postalveolar lateral tap to an alveolar tap in Nigromante Zapotec, but many other Cajonos varieties maintain the lateral tap. So these were some phonological differences that we focused on during the workshop so that students would be able to recognize these sounds when they were reading literature from other Zapotecs. So for example, there are some award-winning novelists, Javier Castellanos and Mario Molina Cruz, who have both written novels in Zapotec in their own varieties. And there's also SIL material. And all of these we wanted our students to be able to read. So, for example, we presented sound correspondences such as these in lexical items so that speakers would immediately be able to recognize that Gitzat, for example, is the variety that is used in Beitasa's Zapotec, and that it corresponds to Gitzat hair in Ingramante Zapotec. So we went through some sound correspondence sets with speakers, and they were pretty immediately able to recognize where each variant was from. And then we went over the ways that these different sounds are written down. So it kind of boiled down to saying X with an underline corresponds to cha or sha in your variety. And so we just went over the characters that might be used in other Zapotecs. And I think by teaching these variants, this allows for complete mutual intelligibility in writing. And the mutual intelligibility in terms of speaking is already there. So it's actually very easy for speakers to convert once they recognize the characters. Okay, so to wrap up, some things that we learned from this workshop. Literacy can help to increase revitalization of a spoken language, and it can also increase speaker valorization of their language. And we found that ownership, both at a community and an individual level, is increased when speakers are invited to participate as actively as possible in the creation of the orthography. And especially when you're drawing upon a system that already exists, that they are already familiar with on some level. Using lexical items, I think, was the fastest way to get speakers to latch onto new information. And again, I think collaboration both helped speakers be able to master supersegmentals faster, and it also contributed to an ownership of the writing system. And finally, focusing too much on variation, though it may be interesting to us, is not necessarily helpful to speakers. But lexical differences are the best tokens, again, of variation, especially phonological variation, because these differences are so salient to speakers. That's it. Thank you.
Apart from the typical obstacles you would come across with this and the confusion with some people who were familiar with Spanish characters and trying to apply that, did you ever come across any active resistance to the characters you chose? Did anyone ever say, it shouldn't be this, it should be something else? Or did you ever have any resistance to what you were doing?
I think the resistance was mainly when they were developing the Asachi alphabet. But since they had been using this alphabet, and they were kind of familiar with the alphabet, we were just adapting it to our dialect. There wasn't much resistance, because they had been familiar with some of the Zapotec writing with the Asachi alphabet.
I was confused about the timeline of the community involvement. So I realize you were a speaker, but at what point was the community involved to decide we're going to continue on the Asachi alphabet, we're going to do these changes?
It has been a long process. And this adaptation we're making is just like the last part. Many of the indigenous teachers some of the indigenous teachers and I myself participated in the development on reviewing of the Asachi alphabet that was like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And some members of our community also participated in that. And so this is, we are trying to adapt it to our community, and this is like more recent. Like I said, it's been a long process, and it started with indigenous teachers, and now we're trying to incorporate speakers, like different ages, kids and students.
So I have a question about the learning to write tone. So I've been involved in situations where developing community orthography for tone has proved to be very, very complicated. And in particular, people have, in my experience, have had a very hard time learning to write tone. They produce it wonderfully, but have a very hard time writing it. And so I was wondering, in this specific case, what kind of success or difficulties, by the end of the workshop, how good were people at writing tone or not?
By writing, you mean hearing it and correctly labeling it,
right?
I think there has been varied success. I think just as we are probably all aware, some people are better at hearing it and then being able to label it.
Yep.
And I think, yeah, it really depends on the person.
Yeah, and this is like the beginning stage, and many students are still having troubles. Like myself, I'm not, very good at it. I'm still learning, but I have been practicing for a long time, and I still have problems. So for students, it's still a big problem. So we need to practice.
Yeah, I guess not.
And the other thing is, like, we decided to represent the tone only when the context is given us a clear meaning of the word.
And just sort of following up from that, like, I'm wondering if at the end you would just end up with a short list of all the words that tend to get confused, and then you could just memorize, like, okay, when ga means nine, it gets this one, and when ga means basket, it gets that one. And then maybe someone learning literacy would only have to memorize 40, 50 words that need tone. So instead of teaching this accent means this tone, it's more we use this accent to distinguish two words that would be identical, like Spanish does with like L without an accent and L with.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a really good suggestion. So we did not do that, but I think that would be a great thing to do next year and would probably make things a lot more approachable for people. So thank you.
Sorry to have yet another tone question. It's so difficult here. Did you find that there were pairs of tones that were more difficult to identify for speakers that might require, so that the easier ones might be marked, the ones that are not as easy to perceptually tease apart would not be marked? Did you find any patterns on this?
So I think the biggest problem with that is when words are in isolation. So I honestly still have problems if I'm eliciting a word list, recognizing sometimes like a mid tone from a low tone or a high tone. So we focus primarily on putting the minimal pairs for tone in phrases. So we can go back. So if you compare like gavening versus gavening, I think that was a pretty salient contrast for people. And then if you compare the tone on the ga syllable to bene ga, like in three, if you compare three to either one or two, I think that was pretty salient for people. So by themselves, I think it's really hard. In isolation, it's really hard, I think, sometimes to be able to distinguish tone. So we shied away from that as much as possible. Does that answer your question? Yes?
Yeah, same question. Which one's to mark, which one's not to mark?
Right. So I think I didn't actually say this, but mid-tone we never marked. So it was always going to be either an accent grave or the other accent for a high tone. And I think at least a high-low contrast is a little bit more approachable too, because they're so different from each other.
One more question. But there's time in the break. So
what do you do when you have one group of people that are attached to one orthography where they mark all the short vowels, like with Brev's, they don't mark the long vowels? Then there's another group that mark all the long vowels with a grave accent and don't mark the short vowels. And they're both kind of like, we really are attached to these orthographies. We're talking like 4 or 5 decades. What do you do with that when you're trying to have the community and try and get a standardized orthography?
Well, that's, I don't know, we mentioned that we teach or some of the different representations. So we're not trying to impose, or we're not trying to, because it's difficult, right? And so the only thing we did was like teach our students how to read, how other people write the same thing as we are, so that they can read other people's writings. But it, I mean, it's very difficult. It implies a lot of things, like political things, even religious things.
Yes.
And so it is hard.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I have a definite answer.
I mean, yeah, I guess making sure that there's always a note of where the person is from that is writing that, I feel like is the best way to overcome those sorts of problems.
Many thank you. Thank you.